This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our report with the Pope at this Wednesday's midweek general audience and other stories. That will be followed by Panorama and then our feature Health and Healing. I am John Baptist Tumusime. Pope Francis has invited Catholics to put prayer at the center of their spiritual life because it unites us to Christ. The Holy Father made the call on Wednesday at the midweek general audience, which was broadcast on live stream because of the COVID-19 pandemic. This week's teaching was a continuation of last week's catechesis on prayer, but this time on how prayer was a driving force of the missionary activity of the first Christians.
Leggendo gli Atti degli Apostoli, scopriamo allora come il potente motore dell'evangelizzazione siano le riunioni di preghiera.
Quoting the Book of the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 2, verse 42, the Pope outlined the four essential characteristics of ecclesial life, that is, listening to the teaching of the apostles, safeguarding of mutual communion, the breaking of the bread, and prayer. He explained that these four remind us that the Church's existence has a meaning if it remains firmly united to Christ, that is, in community, in His Word, in the Eucharist, and in prayer. He noted that today the Church's life too is centered on prayer, which unites us to Christ and inspires our witness to the gospel and our charitable service to those in need. In prayer, the Pope went on, we experience the life of the risen Jesus, who in the power of the Spirit continues to be present to our world, especially in the Church's teaching and sacraments, and our efforts to advance His kingdom of reconciliation, justice, and peace.
Il Catechismo ha un'espressione molto densa. Dice così, lo Spirito Santo ricorda Cristo alla sua Chiesa orante.
Citing the Catechism of the Catholic Church, the Pope said the Holy Spirit keeps the memory of Christ alive in the Church and grants courage and conviction to all those missionaries who in our day too face difficulties, dangers, and persecution for the sake of the gospel. The Holy Father prayed that like the early Christians, we may learn through the cultivation of personal and communal prayer to be ever more closely united to the God of love and to bring that same love to the world around us. The Archbishop of Kampala in Uganda, His Grace Cyprian Kizito Lwanga, has called upon politicians, security agencies, and the ordinary Ugandan citizens to be tolerant of one another and to refrain from acts of violence. The Archbishop made the call on Monday, 2 days after Ugandan police killed over 45 people in different parts of the country following protests against the arrest of a prominent opposition politician, Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine. Speaking from Kampala, Archbishop Lwanga reminded Ugandans that God wants nothing from them but peace, and everyone should strive to make sure that peace prevails in the country. Uganda will hold general elections in January next year. Like in the past elections, this year's political campaigns are characterized by violence committed especially by state security agencies against politicians and supporters of the opposition. The Catholic bishops of Eritrea released a statement a few days ago calling for peace in the Tigray region, where the Ethiopian federal government is fighting militias allied to the politicians of the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The conflict started 3 weeks ago and, according to reports, federal troops are converging on the region's capital, Mekele. The Tigray region borders Eritrea, and last week Tigray militias attempted to widen the conflict by firing 2 missiles into Eritrea, causing damage to the airport and narrowly missing the building that houses the Ministry of Information. The Eritrean bishops described every war as anti-life because it kills, maims, destroys, displaces, and sows hatred among people. They called upon the parties at the center of the conflict in Ethiopia to refrain from hate speech and to resolve the crisis through dialogue. They invited the clergy, religious, and the faithful to pray for peace in Ethiopia. Meanwhile, the High Commissioner of the United Nations Human Rights Council, Michelle Bachelet, has called upon the federal government of Ethiopia to protect civilians in the ongoing conflict in the Tigray region. Daniel Johnson reports.
The High Commissioner's appeal on Tuesday follows the reported heavy build-up of federal government tanks and artillery around Tigray's capital, Mekele, after a 72-hour ultimatum was issued to regional forces to surrender. Ms. Bachelet's statement responded to allegations that militants loyal to the Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF, were embedded among civilians. This did not give the Ethiopian government carte blanche to respond with the use of artillery in densely populated areas, she insisted, before reminding all parties to the conflict that the protection of civilians was paramount. According to the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, around 500,000 people remain in Mekele. Here's OCHA spokesperson Jens Larke speaking from Geneva.
We have finalized a humanitarian preparedness plan intended to help 2 million people with assistance in Tigray, Afar and Amhara regions. That includes existing humanitarian caseload that we are already helping and an additional 1.1 million people expected to be in need of assistance as a result of this conflict.
High Commissioner Bachelet also said that she was deeply disturbed at the continuing communication blackout in Tigray province, which had made it very difficult for families to talk to each other and for the UN to monitor the situation. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
A delegation of the Southern African Catholic Bishops' Conference is scheduled to make a visit to the Diocese of Pemba in the Cape Delgado province in northern Mozambique to express solidarity with the people there who are experiencing attacks by Islamic militants who call themselves Al-Shabaab. The visit starts on December 2nd and ends on December 4th. A member of the delegation, Bishop Jose Ponce de Leon of Manzini Catholic Diocese in Eswatini, the former Swaziland, said this week that the conflict in Cape Delgado has caused a lot of suffering and the people there need peace. He called upon the international community to help. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
An annual review of terrorism trends has found that sub-Saharan Africa suffered the most attacks linked to the Islamic State group and its affiliates this year. The Global Terrorism Index found that the largest increase in terrorism occurred in Burkina Faso, where deaths rose by 590%. The index, developed by the think tank, the Institute of Economics and Peace, also marks Mozambique, Mali and Niger as among the countries that have had a concerning increase in terrorist attacks. It warned that deteriorating economic conditions could expose more people to extremist propaganda. Overall, the index found that there were just under 14,000 deaths across the world linked to terrorism, the fifth consecutive year that figure had decreased. It found that the largest decrease in deaths were in Nigeria and Afghanistan. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has warned of fresh waves of desert locust swarms in the Horn of Africa region after Cyclone Gati made landfall in northern Somalia at the weekend. The swarms are expected to move south in Somalia and Ethiopia, reaching northern Kenya from the second week of December, according to the UN agency. The heavy rainfall brought by the tropical cyclone is expected to allow widespread breeding. Earlier this year, the region suffered the worst locust invasion in more than 70 years as billions of the insects destroyed crops across the region. Meanwhile, the UN Humanitarian Agency says 42,000 people have been displaced in Somalia by Cyclone Gati. The authorities in Puntland State estimate that the cyclone may have directly or indirectly affected 180,000 people, according to the UN agency. President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa has condemned a recent spate of attacks on foreign drivers that has seen dozens of lorries set on fire or damaged. The president referred to the attacks as mindless and bloody lawlessness and has said they cannot be tolerated. Meanwhile, he has asked the ministers in charge of transport and labor to investigate the attacks and submit a report. Lorry drivers groups in South Africa have been holding demonstrations to protest against the hiring of foreign drivers, mostly from neighboring countries. A boat carrying more than 30 migrants has capsized near the Spanish Canary Islands in the Atlantic, leaving 4 migrants dead. The accident happened late on Tuesday off the northern coast of the island of Lanzarote. The past months have seen increasing numbers of migrants trying to reach the Canary Islands, the EU territory nearest to Northwest Africa. Last week, Spain announced plans to set up emergency camps on the Canary Islands to provide shelter for some of the thousands of the recently arrived African migrants. Migration Minister José Luis Escrivá said temporary accommodation for 7,000 migrants will be ready within weeks. He said the government was preparing a more stable arrangement for processing new arrivals, but he warned that only a small proportion of the arrivals this year will qualify for asylum. More than 18,000 people have arrived on the islands this year alone, more than 10 times the number seen last year. And former president of Niger, Mamadou Tanja, has died at the age of 82. Mr. Tanja ruled from 1999 to 2010 when he was overthrown in a coup after trying to stay in power beyond a two-term limit. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Health and Healing. The international community concluded the World Antimicrobial Awareness Week on Tuesday with the theme, Antimicrobials Handle with Care. The event was organized by the World Health Organization and the Food and Agriculture Organization and their partner agencies. The purpose was to increase awareness of global antimicrobial resistance and to encourage best practices among the general public, health workers, and policymakers to avoid the further emergency and spread of drug-resistant infections. An antimicrobial is a substance of natural, semi-synthetic or synthetic origin that kills or stops the growth of microbes that cause ill health to us. The microbes include bacteria, viruses, fungi, and parasites such as worms. Examples of antimicrobials include antibiotics and organic acids. Antimicrobial resistance occurs when bacteria, viruses, fungi, and parasites resist medications, making common infections harder to treat and increasing the risk of diseases spreading, severe illness, and death. Resistance has been accelerated by a number of factors, including overuse of medicine in humans, livestock, and agriculture, as well as poor access to clean water, sanitation, and hygiene. Dr. Keith Sampson is an official of the Food and Agriculture Organization. He explains.
We've been facing this problem of antimicrobial resistance for some time. It is spreading, it is affecting every country on the planet. So in that sense, it is already a pandemic. And perhaps people are very aware now of the impacts of the COVID pandemic, but they may not be so aware that the antimicrobial resistance that we face is equally, if not more important in terms of its long-term impacts on the planet, on our human health. It's already estimated that 700,000 people a year die from drug-resistant infections. In other words, infections that normally could be treated, but because of antimicrobial resistance, those have become untreatable or were not able to be treated with what was available. And it's a situation that is expected in many ways to really worsen over the next decades. And if left unaddressed, we expect it could cause around 10 million deaths a year by 2050.
What exactly drives antimicrobial resistance?
Essentially, we are the reason that antimicrobial resistance is growing. It's the way that we use these precious chemicals, these precious molecules to treat infections. We've become accustomed to using antibiotics to deal with our health problems. We use them in people to treat infections. We also use them in animals, and they're used also in other agricultural sectors to some extent. We live in one planet. We have really what we consider is common resources of water, which are used between people and animals. And in our environment, the exchange of drug-resistant microbes is taking place, and that's because those microbes have developed resistance because of the way we use antimicrobials. It's a problem that affects all of us, but it comes from our own behaviours.
And how do we tackle this problem? Are there any lessons that can be learnt from our response to the COVID-19 pandemic?
The problems of changing our culture are quite significant. How do we really get past this behaviour that when disease strikes, we think of using antimicrobials in the first place? Preventing those infections would be even better. If we didn't have those infections, we wouldn't need the antimicrobials. So it is important to really reduce the risk of disease for animals, for people, and that will actually reduce the antimicrobial use. Convincing enough people around the world that we need to change our behaviours, that's not a small thing. So we've seen in the pandemic how practices can help to reduce the risk of becoming ill. The way that we wash our hands, the way that we use masks, the way that we would keep distance. We've learnt a number of things. Now, we also have to apply those lessons that behaviour change, it is possible. Sometimes can be done really quite quickly. So I think we've got some things that we can apply to this more silent pandemic of antimicrobial resistance. All of us have an opportunity to make a difference. All of us can participate in controlling antimicrobial resistance.
What can countries do to tackle this global problem, and how is FAO supporting them?
Changing the way that we utilise antimicrobials at a large scale and at an individual scale is important to control. FAO has been working now for more than 5 years to help countries to put into place their national action plans for control of antimicrobial resistance. Currently working in over 40 countries in Africa, Asia and Latin America. At country level, we need to see a combined effort of sectors, medical, veterinary, agricultural, and from the side of policy, legislation, and the environment. That sounds difficult, but through One Health platforms for antimicrobial resistance, that's a device, a tool that's used by countries to bring those sectors together, because really this is a problem for all of us. We all have a role to play. We need others to play their roles as well. We have to work together. And together, we're already seeing that that will make a difference at national level and bring us back on track to control antimicrobial resistance.
Dr. Keith Sampson, an official of the Food and Agriculture Organization. And lastly, food safety. Food safety refers to handling, preparing, and storing food in a way that reduces the risk of people becoming sick after eating the food. Food should be a source of nourishment and enjoyment, not a cause of disease or death. Unfortunately, unsafe food is responsible for hundreds of thousands of deaths every year. According to information gathered by the World Health Organization, the WHO, 420,000 people around the world die and 600 million fall ill every year because of food contaminated with bacteria, viruses, parasites, and different types of poison. According to WHO, ensuring that people have access to safe food requires sustained investment in stronger regulations, laboratories, surveillance, and monitoring. basic rules such as keeping our hands clean and cooking food thoroughly contribute to food safety. But unfortunately, many people in the world live in places where water is scarce and therefore cannot always wash their hands, and where sanitation is poor and therefore difficult to avoid contact with the microbes. In such situations, food safety is difficult to maintain. Dr. David Massey is an official of the Food and Agriculture Organization.
Food safety is about following very, very simple rules to make sure that you don't catch bacteria or viruses or parasites.
Right. It's just, I've never really thought about this in such detail. When I buy food from the supermarket, I trust that it's safe. I assume there's checks and balances in place to ensure that what ends up on my plate is okay to eat. Is it not then?
I would draw a distinction from developed countries and developing countries. We take absolutely for granted that our supermarkets, our food suppliers, the shop round the corner, your family, and ultimately, I suppose, your government is ensuring that food is safe. And there are incredible systems in place to make sure that, of course, everything you do eat, that it is safe. But if you are not so fortunate, if you are living in a place with poor sanitation, where you are actually food insecure, you don't actually have enough to eat, then you can't make such good choices.
And what are the main factors contributing to this now and looking into the future?
Well, the big picture, I'd say, is certainly climate change and urbanization. If there's less water in some parts of the world, people will be moving to cities. That changes their diets, that changes their lifestyles. The second thing, that the food supply, where our food comes from, how far it has to travel. Food is going to have to travel further to meet the needs of people who live in urbanized settings, with maybe 10 million people living in these mega cities of the future. You're going to get the case of food being bought online. Already so much food is bought online. Where are the checks? What technology do we need in place to ensure that that food is safe?
That's interesting. What role can technology play in determining if food is unsafe?
Well, I imagine you want your olive oil to be olive oil, right?
Yes.
Imagine going into the supermarket with your mobile phone, scanning the bottle, and it will tell you if it was really olive oil or not. Not by reading the barcode, but by actually looking at the qualities of the oil. That's a potential future use of technology. Blockchain technology, another fascinating world which people usually think of in terms of cryptocurrency. But if you can eliminate paper certification for food traveling across borders, and if you can have a trusted system of exchange of digital information, then things are going to move faster, safer, with more traceability, and you can guarantee that your product at the end of that journey is as authentic as when it started.
So that's one example of what a future food safety measure might look like. What should governments be doing to ensure that our food is safe?
They need to bring together all the stakeholders, all people responsible for the food chain, set strong regulations, develop regulatory authorities that you have good standards, good codes of practice, good aquaculture practice, good agriculture practice, good farming methods. These are the things that will ensure that all the way along the continuum, from farm to fork or from grass to glass, that food is safe. Because it's not just the threat to human health, it's also the economic aspect of this. If people are sick, they can't work. This affects young people more, vulnerable people, marginalized people, and people affected by conflict or people migrating. It's a vicious circle.
But how do you create a world where the food safety standards in one country are the same as the standards in another country?
Well, that's exactly where you need the world full of standards, which is the Codex Alimentarius. This is the international standard-setting authority for food safety, a joint program between FAO and WHO. Here you are setting the benchmark standards to ensure that what we eat and what we trade is safe, of the expected quality, and therefore meeting the international regulations under the World Trade Organization.
So what about us consumers? What can we do to ensure that the food that we're eating or we're buying is actually safe?
The keys that the World Health Organization put together, though, are quite simple and straightforward, and we should all try to follow things like keeping your hands clean. You know, you go into a delicatessen in any part of the world, and you might see the person with gloves or without gloves. Now, what do you think? Better to have gloves or better not to have gloves?
I'd say better to have gloves.
Yeah, and there's two great big schools of thought, because if you're wearing gloves but you've got your finger in your hair, then you're not solving any problems. So clean is the issue here.
Or handling money, perhaps, as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. Same thing, handling money with gloves. If you're changing, you know, like when you watch a hospital drama on TV, the surgeon will be changing their gloves every time they touch something different.
Mm.
So it's probably actually easier to keep your hands clean. Another piece of advice, another key, keep the raw separated from the cooked. You don't want raw meat dripping onto something which is cooked in the fridge. That's a classic way to transfer some of the pathogens that we've been talking about. Temperature, really, really important. You can kill a lot of things by cooking them thoroughly. Keep food at safe temperatures. Don't leave things out in the sun. Use a fridge if you have one, but be aware of temperatures. And I think since time immemorial, people have been aware of where cool places are and how to store things in an appropriate way. It's not just a case of having a super deluxe fridge. Use safe water and safe raw materials. And here, if you know where your food has come from, if it's grown locally, then you've got a much better chance. And in fact, we spoke earlier about food having to travel thousands and thousands of miles in different conditions to satisfy the way urbanization is changing the way we're living. But there's nothing to be said for the reality of picking something out of your own garden, cooking it properly, and knowing where it came from, how it was treated, if pesticides were used.
Dr. David Massey, an official of the Food and Agriculture Organization. Earlier, we heard Dr. Keith Sampson, also an official of the Food and Agriculture Organization. Both were interviewed by Charlotte Lomas, a communications officer of the Food and Agriculture Organization. And with that, we come to the end of this week's edition of Health and Healing. You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature on culture and society. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.